The Book Nook on WISO is made possible by five local library systems in Southwest Ohio: the Greene County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Clark County Public Library, the Dayton Metro Library, and the Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WISO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Peter Blauner. Hello, Peter.
Hey, Vic. How are you?
Excellent. Where are you, Peter?
I am in Brooklyn, New York, where I've pretty much been for most of my life.
Is that a little Brooklyn accent, then, that I'm hearing?
It comes and goes, Okay. Depending upon who I'm talking to.
Well, you have a new book out called Proving Ground. And I had not read your work before, and this was a revelation. This was a new discovery for me. Is this the first book you've written in a while?
It is the first book I've written in 11 years. I had six books on the other side of that 11-year divide, and in between I've been writing for television shows like Law & Order, Special Victims Unit, and more recently Blue Bloods on CBS.
Oh, so you've been busy with TV.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you decided to write another novel, and from what I understand, this is the first book in a new series?
Yes, I'm going to be continuing the character of Lourdes Robles, who is the NYPD detective who appears in this book. She's sort of a brash, profane Latina who comes from a family that has some criminal background itself. But she rebels kind of against that background and becomes a cop. But interestingly, she isn't necessarily the lead character of this particular book.
No, she's working with a detective who's getting ready to retire. And wow, he's a great character. I love this guy.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Sullivan. He is someone who's had kind of a tough life and a long run at the NYPD and is based on a lot of guys who I know from the job as well, because I've been fortunate enough to get to be friends over a period of time with a bunch of really experienced and wise detectives. And I always try and draw on real-life experience when I write about these guys. But again, Sully isn't necessarily the lead character in the book either.
That's true.
It's really this guy, Natty Dredd, Nathaniel Dresden, who is a war veteran coming back and getting involved in trying to solve the murder of his father, who he's been estranged from. And it's really Natty who is the lead character in the book.
And his father is a prominent attorney and not someone who a lot of the police really care to investigate the murder of.
His father is a prominent civil rights and criminal defense attorney, and he's someone who's much hated by the New York City Police Department. And when they draw up a list of suspects, it's a very, very long one, because he has antagonized both the local authorities and the federal authorities, because he's suing the FBI on behalf of a client, an Arab mailman who was kidnapped off the street and subjected to enhanced interrogation techniques in black sites and at Gitmo Bay. Hence the conflict that's in the background of the story between the father and the son, between Natty and his father. And that's really what the heart of the book is, in my mind, this son trying to resolve the relationship with his father after his father has died, and trying to do it through finding out who killed his father.
My guest is Peter Blauner. His new novel is Proving Ground. Yeah, the father issue is big, and that reminds me there's another character in here who's very important, and that's his dead father's law partner.
Right. Without giving too much of the plot away, at a certain point I realized that I was following some of the story points of Hamlet.
Mm.
And that if that's a story that's worked for almost 600 years, I'd have to really do something special to screw it up. If you look back at Hamlet, what I hadn't realized until I started writing this book is that Hamlet himself is a war veteran. And one interpretation of the play is that these visions he's having of his father's ghost urging him to take vengeance might be a manifestation of what today we call post-traumatic stress disorder.
Mm-hmm.
When I started to think about it in those terms, I really got interested in telling the story and really got interested in delving into the reality of what that state of mind is like.
Let's talk about the relationship between these two detectives, because Sully is really kind of a mentor to this young woman, isn't he?
Yes. Yes. He's done it all. He's seen it all. He's been with the department since the Wild West days of the 70s and the 80s, which is when I grew up in New York City. And their relationship in some ways is a father-daughter relationship, because her own father is in prison, for murder. And so he becomes kind of a surrogate father for her in some ways. But then at other times it becomes something else, because he has a wife who died many years before, and in some ways Lourdes very much reminds him of his dead wife. So there's a certain ambiguity at the heart of their relationship that doesn't quite eclipse their duties as police officers to investigate this crime, but I hope it gives them a kind of a different dimension than cops you would read about in your usual thriller.
Which creates sort of an odd kind of under-the-surface, almost sexual tension between the two of them.
Yeah, very much so at times. And as to whether that's actually realized, well, I hope people will read the book and see that. But part of what I wanted to do with Lourdes, that's a little bit different than what I was doing with Natty, is leave some room for her to grow,
mm-hmm.
change as a character over the course of several books. Because the way I've always felt is that a book should be about change and about change in people's lives. And what Natty goes through in the book is a pretty dramatic period of change and reckoning. And to have somebody go through something that's that big and that powerful in more than one book, well, it begins to make you feel like you're dealing with a character that's not entirely credible. Whereas when you're dealing with a character who is sort of changing and growing in a more gradual way, the way Lourdes is, well, that you can begin to develop over a series of books and a series of stories and cases.
When I was reading about Natty's father, the murdered lawyer, his father's character reminded me a little bit of someone like maybe David Dellinger. Did you model him on anybody in particular?
I know a bunch of well-known criminal defense lawyers and a bunch of well-known civil rights attorneys. I mean, obviously, you have in the back of your mind the image of Atticus Finch from To Kill a Mockingbird.
Mm-hmm.
But part of what I've tried to do in my life is go out and have real life experiences and get to know people in a more personal way, and not just borrow from other books or television shows and movies to come up with the texture of real life. So I'm borrowing from a lot of different people to create this character and drawing on things that I've seen in the courtroom and in the back room to really give you the specific weight of a real person.
Peter Blauner joins us. His new novel is Proving Ground, and you've got some pretty impressive blurbs on here from people like Dennis Lehane, Stephen King, one from Richard Price, and you remind me a little bit of Richard Price. I think you both have the same kind of approach. Is that a legitimate thing to observe?
I'm a huge, huge fan of Richard Price's, and I was really very happy to have those words from Richard. I've admired him from the earlier part of his career when writing, I guess you could say, more autobiographical novels. Mm. And if you haven't read them, I'd highly recommend The Wanderers and Blood Brothers and Ladies' Man. And then the books that he's written in the second half of his career, which are more similar to the kind of books that I write now, which are kind of East Coast urban crime stories. And crime stories as opposed to mysteries or thrillers, because that kind of like suggests a kind of pressure that doesn't allow you to really grow into a character. And so I very much identify with the kind of books that he writes. And to say that he's been a big influence on me is not to suggest that he's like an old man or anything like that. He happened to become very, very successful when he was very young.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think his best books may very well be in the future.
Well, we had him on for his last book, and he can take a while. He can take his time. Of course, he's working on TV and stuff like that, too. It's kind of a distraction, isn't it, to be working on television? I mean, look at you. You hadn't put out a book in 11 years. How is it different? What's different about your approach to writing for TV or to write a novel?
Well, I find it difficult to go back and forth between writing for TV and writing a novel on the same day. I find it impossible. It's almost like changing skulls. it's just a completely different state of mind. And the truth is that you can write a television script in 4 days if everybody's kind of in agreement on what it's supposed to be. The characters are already established. There's only a certain number of scenes that are going to be in an hour-long show. And actually, when I say an hour-long network show, it's actually about 40 minutes mm-hmm. of television that you're writing. And people are looking for a very specific kind of experience when they turn on a Blue Bloods or one of the Law and Order shows. And so you're a worker among workers when you're providing the storyline that fits into that format. When you sit down and look at the blank page to write a book, well, that's a different kind of undertaking. And that, whereas the script can take 4 days, a book can easily take 4 years. And I've taken that much and more because I'm trying to create the reality with each sentence as it hasn't existed before. I'm really trying to make the statue from stone with my bare hands. I'm not saying that out of any self-pity or anything like that, because no one asked you to volunteer for this kind of work. But it's just there are a lot of choices to be made, and as far as I'm concerned, there's a lot of work to be done in getting to know the world that you're writing about and getting to know the people that you're writing about. And I think if you're asking a reader to plop down X amount of dollars to buy a book and to invest the hours that it takes to read a book, I think you owe it to them to give a full five-dimensional experience to them when they're investing that kind of time and money.
Well, I've been hosting this program since 1994, and over that period I have seen so many changes in publishing, and I'm guessing that between your last book and this one, you've really noticed some amazing changes yourself.
Well, people read digitally now, and I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. It allows people to have your whole catalog and backlist in their hands within seconds. If they finish one book and they decide they like what they've read, they don't have to root around a bookstore and ask somebody to order your backlist and then wait for 3 weeks, and there's a kind of instant satisfaction in getting that into people's hands. And frankly, a good piece of writing is a good piece of writing. I read all of Tolstoy's Anna Karenina on my iPhone. That sounds insane. at some level. But what happened is I actually had one of those paperback editions, and the print was really small, and it was hard to read. And also, I didn't like the translation. And then I got one on my iPhone, and I liked the translation. And having to keep swiping and just read like a few sentences at a time gave me the opportunity to sort of bear down and really focus on his writing line by line in a way that you wouldn't when you're looking at the page and your eyes are dancing up and down the page.
Huh.
So I'm not against that completely. You know, whatever gets the relationship between the writer and the reader going, I'm in favor of.
My guest is Peter Blauner. His new book is Proving Ground. I'm a little reluctant to tell listeners very much about the story because it's a spoiler city. What do you want to tell them about the story just to kind of pique their interest?
Well, then it's a murder mystery that becomes a revenge story about halfway through. And without giving away too much of the plot, I think there's a famous saying from Confucius that when one sets out on the road to revenge, always bring two shovels, one to dig a grave for your enemy and one to dig one for yourself.
Okay. Yeah, that's a real quote, huh?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, okay. I hadn't heard that, but that's certainly food for thought.
It's a murder mystery that's about the relationship between this father and his son. And in reckoning with the circumstances of the murder, he must not only deal with the afterlife of his relationship with his father, but the afterlife of his experiences in the war.
Mm. Well, you've got a very tasty twist in this one. And I'm wondering, does the twist come before the rest of the story? How do you get to the twist?
What I do is I outline the book exhaustively, much in the same way as I outline a television show, actually. Get a cork board, and I get a stack of 3x5 index cards, and I write down what each scene or chapter is going to be on each index card, and then I put it up on the cork board. And the difference between writing for television and writing for a novel is this exactly. If I follow those cards exactly as I've laid them out when I'm writing a novel, mm-hmm. I have failed.
Mm.
In other words, if I follow the game plan to the last degree when I'm writing a novel, that's not good, because that means at no point have the characters taken over and developed an independent life of their own, because once they do that, they're going to have their own idea of where the story is going to go, and that's where the twist comes in. Whereas in television, you absolutely cannot do that, because a good 150 to 200 people need to follow the same game plan that you laid out.
Mm.
And there's costume people, there's actors, there's the director, there's the cinematographer. And so you can't be showing up on the set on the day of shooting and going, wait, I got an idea for a great plot twist that's going to change the meaning of the whole story. Because people would lynch you
right
there. They would go to the prop department and they would get a piece of rope and they'd tie it around your neck and they'd tie the other end to the bumper of a Buick and they'd take off and that would be the end of you. Whereas I absolutely need that to happen when I'm writing a novel.
Uh-huh. I really enjoyed this story because it's so tight. After reading it, I said, I need to go back and I need to track down your other books. Tell us about your other novels. I'm not familiar with them.
Well, the other novels are all standalone stories because I like to take a character and put them through a life-changing experience and leave you someplace at the end that you never thought you would be at the beginning. And I also like to immerse myself in the research for writing these books. So for my very first novel, Slow Motion Riot, I left my job. I had been a journalist at New York Magazine, and I became a volunteer probation officer in New York City for 6 months.
Oh.
So I could have the real life experience of what that was like. So I could see what the rooms, what the buildings, what the streets looked like, and also so I could really feel the emotional temperature of the relationship between the probation officer and his clients. For the most recent book, which appeared in 2006, which is called Slipping into Darkness, it's almost like the direct opposite of that, because that's about somebody who gets out of prison after 20 years for something that he may or may not have done. And it's a sentence that began when he was 17 years old and ends when he's 37 years old. And you were talking about the difference between the last time I published a novel in 2006 and publishing a novel now in 2017. Well, this is a guy who goes into prison at the age of 17 in 1983 and gets out in 2003 and discovers an entirely new world, one in which there are cell phones, one in which there's digital information and social media, and one in which social interactions are completely different than they were at a time when he went in. And he's at the disadvantage of having missed the cruise of his maturation. So that story is told from his point of view and also from the point of view of the detective who locked him up for this crime that he may or may not have committed, and who must begin to reckon with the fact that he may ruin somebody's life for the wrong reason. And then there are several books in between. There's one called Casino Moon that is kind of a mafia in Atlantic City, and a book in kind of a throwback to the classic noirs of the 40s and the 50s. There was a book called The Intruder, which is about a family on the Upper West Side of Manhattan who were stalked by an apparently deranged homeless man, but the twist is that the hero of the book is actually the homeless man. Then there's a book called Man of the Hour, which is a story that may remind readers of a true life story where a school teacher rescues a bunch of students from a bombing on a school bus and is hailed as a hero in the media for a few days, and then the police begin to suspect that he may have been the bomber himself. And how he begins to reckon with how that changes his life. And I guess the only other book that I haven't mentioned was called The Last Good Day, and that came out in 2003, and that was written in the immediate aftermath of 9/11. And in fact, The Last Good Day, the title refers to September 10th.
Wow. That's interesting that you would mention that, because on September 10th, 2001, my guest in studio was a guy who used the pen name Ed McBain.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Great writer.
The whole world changed the next day. And what a guy. When I think of New York City and crime novels, I think of him.
Yep. He helped to define the genre. I mean, it was interesting with that book. I know a lot of people who sort of said, well, why write? How can I continue to write after something like this happens? And it was horrible, and it was a tragedy, and I was in New York City at the time, and I actually had to get my kids from school with the air full of papers blowing over across the river from the World Trade Center. But I grew up thinking and being taught that one of the things a novel can do is tell us something about the times we live in. So I almost felt there was a duty to keep writing and to record this moment so people would remember how it felt. And not just from the point of view of the people who were actually there, because that's their story to tell, but from the point of view of the ordinary citizen. And that also sort of relates back to what I was trying to do with Proving Ground. I mean, there was an interesting thing that happened when I decided to write this book. I realized I was going to write about a veteran. And there was a moment when I hesitated, because I've never wanted to write a war novel. And the reason is that I haven't served myself. Too young for Vietnam, and frankly, I was too old for the later wars. And I felt the story of combat is one that should be told by people who were there. And there are a number of veterans who write very, very well. Matt Gallagher and Phil Clay and Kevin Powell. And going back to the earlier era, Tim O'Brien and Norman Miller. And I didn't feel I could compete with those guys. It can be done. Stephen Crane wrote Red Badge of Courage without having been in the Civil War. He was born in 1871, but it wasn't something that I felt that I could do. But when I began to think about what it's like to come back from the war, and to be making that transition back into what we call regular society, that began to seem like something that's fair game and something that I could begin to tackle myself.
Well, you certainly do. The book is Proving Ground. Peter Blauner wrote it, and I need to track down your other works now that I've been turned on to your writing. And I'm wondering, did you start off wanting to be a journalist when you were a kid? Did you want to be a newspaper reporter? What did you want to do?
Well, I wanted to be a novelist when I was a kid.
Okay.
And I realized pretty early on no one was going to pay a living wage to a know-nothing kid with no life experience worth writing about. And so I went to the library one day, and I began pulling books off the shelves by writers who I admired. And I flipped to the back of each one to see what these guys, and they were mostly men in those days, so my reading habits have changed, to see what these guys did for a living before they became novelists. And I remember I pulled down Hemingway, and I pulled down Graham Greene, and I pulled down John O'Hara, and I think I even pulled down Raymond Chandler. And each of them at some point in their lives had been a journalist. And a light went on. I realized, oh, that's a way to learn something about how the real world works and to make a living wage in the meantime. So that's what I did for a few years. As soon as I graduated from college, I got myself a job. I'd been lucky enough to get a job working briefly as an assistant to a journalist I very much admire, Pete Hamill.
Oh, yeah.
The great newspaper columnist and great author. And he taught me everything I know and still know as a writer. Then I began looking for ways to really accumulate not only life experiences, but ways to kind of penetrate the world and to actually get through the door into other people's lives so that I could begin to write about them in a more informed and empathetic way, if not always sympathetic.
Hmm.
And I've tried to use those techniques of journalism to get outside my own head over and over and over again, because I decided very early on I didn't want to write coming-of-age stories. I didn't want to write what I call snow on the tennis court novels. You know what I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to write about the world as it is. Stories that reflect the times that we live in. And, you know, Proving Ground, I guess, attempts to be an example of that by writing about the war from the point of view of the homecoming. And that's probably what I will continue to do until they pry the keyboard from my stiff little fingers.
And I assume that the next book is being written?
It's being researched and it's being written as we speak.
Okay.
And hopefully it's not going to be 11 years between the last book and this one. I mean, 11 years is a long time. Last time I wrote a book, Saddam Hussein was alive and George Bush was in the White House. And I think we might have even been two popes back from the one we're at now.
Might have been. Well, Peter, I have to concur with Dennis Lehane when he said Proving Ground is a beautifully written and relentlessly exciting thriller. Definitely is, and I really enjoyed it, and I look forward to the next one. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Vic.
You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. My guest has been Peter Blauner. His book is Proving Ground for The Book Nook. Thanks for listening.